Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD, week number 6 of the term, and Mike and John both are covering from Seagraph. How's it going, my friend?
Good. How's things with you?
Absolutely outstanding. Happy to be back and working on FX PhD and FX Guide full-time. Obviously, that's true at Seagraph as well, but by that I mean the day-to-day work that doesn't go away when we're at a conference.
As opposed to the margaritas, sunshine by the pool time that we had at Seagraph.
Oh, yes, exactly. It was
I might have missed that bit.
Maybe that was a dream. I don't know. But actually, it was a hell of a lot of fun seeing you, my friend, and hanging out. It was nice. The last time I believe that the Seagraph was in the L.A. area, I was in Anaheim, and I did not see you hardly at all.
No, I think
this was very different.
And I've got to say, it was a particularly good show for me. I found a lot of interesting stuff, good mix between old and new tech, good mix between seeing people that I hadn't seen in ages and meeting new people. So it was really good. I guess for me, that is one of the things I want out of Seagraph. You know, it's not just meeting up with old people and kind of reminiscing kind of thing. You want to learn some new stuff. By the same token, it is a great collecting of the clan.
Yes, exactly. And expanding the clan. And keeping eye on new tech and interesting stuff as well. As the VR was taking quite a bit of notice at the show, actually some really cool stuff. We were both able to see some very interesting stuff at Seagraph as well as before Seagraph.
So what was your highlight of the show?
Well, hanging with you.
Okay, but apart from that, tech-wise, what was the highlight of the show? We saw a fair few private room demonstrations as well as stuff down on the show floor.
Yeah.
What set your afterburners on?
Well, I had seen some of the first stuff, I guess, firsthand. I had actually seen the HTC Vive before. However, I had not seen amazing content on it.
Right.
Like we did before. And it was the Vive, right? It wasn't the Crescent Bay. Or was it the Crescent Bay? Regardless, both outstanding.
We looked at both.
Yeah.
The one that was up at the Grammy, that was Crescent Bay.
Yeah, Crescent
Bay. The one
Bay.
That was in the hotel room you didn't put that on that day. You chickened out.
I had seen that one before. I had used the Vive before, however. So, yes. Suffice to say, by Mike's ribbing me about chickening out, I was certainly not chickening out. I was actually feeling quite poor that afternoon, actually, to the point where I had to sit down and lightheaded. And figured it was not the best thing to do to put on a VR headset, especially when, in fairness, Mike, your session
of a hangover without
but on top of it, quite frankly, Mike, your session in the headset did really not instill a lot of confidence that I would want to put that on, feeling in my condition.
Well, yeah, not the actual demo itself, but the tech that was running the demo caused the tracking to flip out, which caused the entire horizon line to hit 45 degrees, as if somebody hit you in the head very gently with a piece of lemon wrapped around a brick. And after I did it two times, John was like, I'm not feeling very
good. I was pondering
anything.
It, but I'm just like, not so much. So anyway, that was an interesting demo. I was also really glad, Mike, that you...
Exceptionally interesting renderer, but yes.
Yeah, really, very much so. I was actually really happy that you got to see something very cool that I had seen a couple weeks earlier, and that was a segment, some of the stuff from the folks at 8i are doing.
Yeah,
basically some very nice, it's utilizing photogrammetry techniques to do live captures of people. I'm going to leave it there because I don't know the clearance of what I can say and what they've actually talked about in their rig.
But well, I can. I know because I hooked up with Eugene.
And they said we can definitely talk about it?
We can talk about what's
on the
website.
Talking about, okay, good.
I'm
not going to say anything because I was sworn to complete secrecy. So
yeah. So basically they're filming people with an array of cameras and it's effectively light field technology, though not as we've previously been describing it, in the sense that it's inward looking, not outward looking. So in much of the stuff we've discussed with light fields, we've talked about cameras looking around a room. these are cameras looking into a point, but the same principle applies in that you're virtualizing the position that you can look at from the headset. And as a consequence, you're watching somebody give a performance and you're seeing them really up close and personal. And that's the thing I think that made it so exceptional to me. There's two parts to any bit of demo, right? The first bit is it cool tech? And I have seen some cool tech demos that have been really hard for anybody else to get excited about. Like, I kind of very much knew what I was looking at. I've also seen tech demos that I confess that only years later did I understand the significance of what I was looking at, because, you know, they're like, see this? And you're like, it doesn't look very good. Yes, but it symbolizes a whole new field of maths. And I'm like, okay, if you say so. I don't get that. This one was one of those occasions where the tech is really interesting because of the way they were filming these live action people. But more importantly, they were filming live action people. And one of the criticisms I've had of VR, just at a conceptual level, is that a lot of the demos that we get to see is like, let's stand at Big Sur or the end of some incredibly great, gorgeous outcrop of rock and film VR, and then we'll play that back as an immersive experience. And you go, okay, good, got that. But in many respects, it's like impressive, but not kind of that emotionally engaging.
It doesn't have staying power. I mean, I think that's my thing about it. I mean, it's great the first time you watch it and the second time, and there are frankly really amazing instances and scenic areas that you can see, and that's wonderful. But I guess it doesn't get old quickly, but it does kind of get old quickly. The gag ends and
just want more. Every motion picture is close-ups on actors. You know, yeah. You go to stage plays, not for, you know, the backdrop scenery, but for what the actors are doing with their faces. I mean, that's the A game for me, right? Is a performance. And it at a couple of levels. I think it's a game that you want to play in narrative. It's also the game you want to play in social, in that if we actually wanted to have an interaction between you and I, you and LA, me here, that would be awesome. I would absolutely do that, but I'd want to see you. I wouldn't want to see emotionless, faceless kind of avatar robot-y thing representing you with a bit of hand waving. That's not going to do it. I kind of want to get the nuance of your meaning and intent from your face. And so to get AR or VR to really have punch, I think it needs to be able to tackle people. And so this is one of the most significant tackling of people bits of tech I saw.
Yeah, we were at this one display and Mike had mentioned something and I said, well, you really got to check out this 8i stuff because it's exactly what you're talking about. I mean, the feeling, and there's, if you go to 8i and experience 8i, one of the scenes is a woman holding a baby. And what happens is with the Vive is you can actually walk around and you can get actually what I would consider uncomfortably close to the person as they're speaking. And so it's incredibly compelling. And what's really fascinating about that, I think sometimes, and just selling your point further, Mike, on how you feel, what's amazing about it is the technical quality on this real-time rendering of this as you're walking around viewing it in the Vive. It is not perfect. The renders on the video on the website are much better, the woman holding the baby, from a quality standpoint. But what happens is it doesn't matter, right? Because you are actually capturing a real human's performance. And you very quickly can forgive some of the technical glitches that happen in the vast amounts of data that need to be rendered in this demo, this new tech at the time. And it's just, it's stunning how compelling it is. I mean, it's just, it blew me away, frankly.
Yeah. So the demo John's talking about, Eugene was explaining to me, they had this woman come in, an actress, and she had to, she's holding her baby. She really had, it's her baby, for real. And anyway, the idea was that she'd send a message to, say, a vet overseas, right? So imagine you all got your husband overseas, you got your baby, hi, honey, you know, we're missing you kind of thing. So they went, okay, let's film that. And they did that. And it was, you know, technically worked, of course, but it was like, And then they're thinking, yeah, we'll just try something else. And then one of the guys said, well, why don't you record a message to your daughter, the one in your arms, so that she could watch, you know, when she's 18. And so the woman starts speaking to her baby in the future, but while holding her baby, looking at her. And she just starts breaking up crying. And the way Eugene told the story is that, like, she'd be like, I'm so sorry, I can go again. They're like, no, this is perfect. Just keep
right.
going.
It
don't
is.
Stop. And as she genuinely chokes up with genuine emotion, this thing that John just said about uncomfortably close, now, we don't mean uncomfortably close as in I am technically feeling uncomfortable
no,
because of
emotions.
Yeah, it's like I feel like I'm kind of intruding on a private moment. I'm really sorry. And the only other place I felt that was over at the ICT demo. They have a Holocaust survivor that was videoed or filmed with many, many cameras. and it produces a hologram produced by 200 projectors. And so you put this headgear on and you ask the hologram questions, and the hologram is looking not directly at you because it's not being rendered in real time like a CG character would be. It's a replay, as it were. Having said that, you can be in its eye line where it was looking, and you can look around it, and you don't have to wear glasses. It feels very 3D. But because you're asking questions with a headset on, so it's normal language, it'd be like, so how old are you? Would be sort of a question. And it would understand that. And then the actual Holocaust survivor had recorded hundreds of hours of answers, and so it segues into whichever answer it is. Anyway, so I'm speaking to a hologram. There's no question about, you know. And so we'll ask it some questions. And then it gave me like suggested questions you could ask. Now, many of these are questions that kids ask. And so kids are really blunt. And so one of the questions was like, you know, did you see people kill? Did you ever meet Hitler? And it's like, you know, really? And I'm like, I'm not going to ask a Holocaust survivor some of these questions. They're completely, you know, like not knowing them that well. I mean, obviously not knowing them at all. But, you know, I mean, you just don't sort of blurt out, hey, did you see a lot of people die in the concentration camps? It just felt completely uncomfortable, in the same way that you were saying you were feeling uncomfortable at an emotional level intruding on her moment with her baby. And that's what we've got to get to. Those are the things we've got to punch when we have these emotional kind of reactions that are completely not me analyzing a bit of tech, but me kind of going, I feel something here.
The tech falls out of the way, frankly,
yeah,
in that case, because it is so powerful and frankly so new to be put.
Somebody should do a PhD.
Yeah. Yes. But if you want to check out the 8i stuff, go to 8i, it's the number 8 and the letter i.com, and you click on the Experience 8i link, and you'll see the baby Message of the Future one. That's the one that we're talking about. And there are some variety ones of people playing and Ted Shilowitz juggling and things like that.
I should point out that the 100 Humans Portrait Series, I don't know which number of the 1 to 100, but one of them's you. Right.
Yeah, if I make it into that, yeah. If I don't hit the cutting room floor, that's true. And Alex Henning as well, who's teaching the VR course for us this term as well, part of that. But yes, it was a fun experience. And anyway, that was that was something I was really glad that you got to see before you headed out of town.
Yeah, and that was really, really good. But there was a bunch of really good tech. Mm-hmm. Again, Otoy didn't fail to deliver. I don't have shares in that company or anything. I'm just really impressed with their tech. Like I raved about them last year. I'm still raving about them this year, and I'm raving about them because they're doing really cool stuff. That's the only reason. And wow. And we were in a session, and John and I were in the first session other than the session that they did to the people that lent them the new tech.
Right.
So they got it working, and the people that lent them this super uber new tech said, can we ever go? Okay, then after that we were next. So effectively the first real demo. And while we're in there, every single demo slot to the end of SIDGRAPH went, and there were studio executives outside who were literally like emailing in or messaging in saying, I demand that I come in and see this. like not please or any chance. It was like they were demanding that they had to get in and see it right then. So it was just pretty funny. But yeah, it was it's interesting, isn't it? Like we haven't really yet seen the training wheels come off VR until we get a whole bunch of effectively crescent bays in as a production model coming out. The Vive stuff from Valve come out. The stuff from Sony, Morpheus and stuff. Until they all released, this is just the quiet before the storm. But it's pretty noisy for a quiet for a pre-storm area. I mean, it's pretty not very noisy, is it? I mean, there's like a lot of buzz going on.
It is, and I mean, I think that the what's really interesting about the Otoy stuff is the idea of light fields and light field photography too. I mean, I forget, was it like the ninth year, I don't know, back on Fundamentals 209 or something, I did a whole thing on light field technology back before the Lytro came out. And I think what the Otoy demo shows is, once again, how that's going to be incredibly important for live action capture as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be incredibly critical as we get larger sensor sizes. I mean, the Lytro was an interesting toy. That was how many years old now? What, 10 years, 8 years old now, maybe, or 7 years old?
Well, they're not even really developing it anymore, right?
No, right, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, that was kind of what the first, I mean, I don't want to call it a proof of concept, it was actually a product, but that's not the quality we're looking for. What you're looking for now is a larger sensor that you can actually move around more in your objects and get closer to what at least we see from the Otoy light field renders.
I think also it was, So this is really funny to say this because you wouldn't think it was true. But I remember when I was a kid, my father explaining that lasers were really a solution looking for a problem. And back then, you know, they didn't really sort of know what they're going to use lasers for. Now, that's ridiculous today, right? Because like laser technology is used in so many areas. But back in the 60s when they kind of first invented it, they were like, well, we could use this for a whole lot of things. And the first thing they actually used it for was, you know, those shitty 60s lamps that had fiber optic things?
Those are so cool.
Was that
cool.
Kind of stuff, right?
Oh, come yeah, on. Those are awesome.
My point is, right up there with lava lamps, my friend. But the thing is, it's easy to develop some new tech and say, well, what you'll use it for is taking photos, but you can adjust the focus later. Seems like a good idea, right? And then we all go, but if you just get the focus right in the first place, and also once I've adjusted the focus and output the shot isn't quite as good as a, in fact, it's not very, you know, it's remarkable for what the tech was, but the actual shot doesn't hold a candle to my, you know, 5D Mark, whatever that was, Mark 1, Mark 2. So it was like, okay. So, well, then you could adjust it. Okay, but then you need a special viewer. Yeah. So this whole light field as the ultimate focus determiner, maybe that's not as big an idea as we thought it was when we started. And then, you know, take a bunch of that tech, as John said, and fold it into VR. And now it's like, oh, okay, now with AR, I need light field so I can focus some graphics at the same place that my eye is focusing, i.e. I focus on the table. I overlay some graphics on the tabletop and they're both at the same focus point. Okay, well, now that's a completely different idea, same kind of underlying maths, but wow, now I could see that be really, really, really useful, and there's a $1 billion industry right there. So, yeah, I think these things, it's not a false start so much as it is just seeing what makes sense to, you know, in a user sense. Like some things seem like a good idea on paper and you make them and you go, yeah, but there's, I don't know how many bits of tech I bought over the years where I go, this seems like a really good idea. So I got one. Jason's in his car at the moment. He's got this thing where you press a button and it does an automatic reverse park. You got that?
I've heard of the, I've seen, I don't have that in my car, but I don't have a car.
Okay, and so I said to Jace, after he showed it to me, it was like, awesome. And then I said to him a little while later, I said, so do you use that? Because, you know, Jason's pretty dab hand at driving at the start off. He's not like a beginner and the guy's, you know, just a good driver. Anyway, oh yeah, I use it all the time. And I went, oh, that surprised me. And he goes, no, I use it all the time to show it to people when they ask about it. My personally, if no one else is in the car, I've never used it. And it's like, okay, that's that bit of tech where you go, well, a self-reversing car seems like a really good idea, but don't actually use it.
Based on the people trying to park on Pacific Avenue, I think it's a really friggin' good idea. And they need to be using it pronto.
Yeah.
Because people can't parallel park. I do find, though, but back to light fields, it is kind of funny because what is it? It's about, it's been like 80 years, right, since the first paper with the concept of light fields came out. And it's like obviously different at that point in time, but now that could be one of the, was going to be a potential savior for stereoscopic acquisition of films, right, for 3D stereo films. Didn't actually quite get there technologically, didn't have the tech. Maybe that will have now happen, and it sounds like it's going to happen. For VR. So really cool stuff.
What was the best tech paper or presentation? Like not, you know, on the show floor.
Okay, stuff, but. I think I told you the one I'm going to write this up for PhD, but I think the cool one is some of this new Hyperlapse stuff that I've been following year after year. I've been going to these papers and have seen a development.
So the only thing you said to me was I went to it and previously I thought as I'm, this is me, Mike Seymour, I was like, well, and I watched it in the papers fast forward. I was like, don't we already have that? Like, what's so new that they actually got a paper in? And you went, oh, and then somebody turned up and said hi.
Yes, I told you. It's real time.
I don't understand.
It's in real time. You shoot a sequence and you can real time vary the speed in Hyperlapse and get a really nice
as
clean result.
As you're filming it?
After you film it. Or,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so after it's been filmed, plays back in real time. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It does not go. You know what? In fairness, that would be actually fucking amazing if, as you filmed it, it was going faster than what you filmed. You're right, Mike. It would be mind blowing. But no, this is pretty cool though, and it is different. Okay, so think about this.
It's sassy today, aren't we, John?
I am. I'm happy. We had a good week last week.
So
let's say you've got 1,000 frames, right?
Yep.
And you want to take that down to 300 frames. If you did that in some kind of application, say I want to speed that up, well, let's take 1,000 frames and take it down to 100. You'd say 10 times speed up, right? And you would drop a sequence of frames and keep white every 10th frame in that mix and to get the speed up, no matter what. So when you put those all together, you could then go ahead and stabilize those images and make them seem kind of smooth over that time, correct? That's in general how you could get a smooth hyperlapse. Yep. You can also just do things such as blending between the various images to smooth over the transitions. But what they came up with in this solution that was quite interesting, I thought, is that, you know what, you don't actually need to be that anal retentive about grabbing only every 10th frame. What if we took a look at, say, maybe 2 frames or 3 frames before and after that frame and said, well, one of those frames is kind of a better match for a previous frame than the original. So the idea being that you could get a lower difference in what would be a translation between the images between those 2 frames. I'm not making sense on this.
No. So if I was filming along and there was a bump, I don't have to take the frame where it's
on the
motion
bump.
Blurred because
yes.
of the bump. I take one either side where it's sort of come back to closer to a sort of a more linear line that I was going along.
Yeah,
the abnormal frame doesn't end up going in by default.
Exactly. They had a great shot of a dog, like a dog GoPro hooked up to dog collar, and the dog kind of swinging his head side to side. And, you know, as dogs do, it's looking to the left of the sidewalk, the right of the sidewalk. But when they did the hyperlapse with their algorithm, they would only take it when the hyperlapse was kind of in the middle of the sidewalk. And so that way, again, when you do your stabilization or blending to smooth things out further, you actually have more play. Because, of course, if it was way off to one side, your image resolution would get smaller. You wouldn't have as much room to actually stabilize it, and your hyperlapse wouldn't be as good. So by...
Is there a website or a company or something I can search on that?
Yeah. I don't have it right here on this computer that I'm talking to you, but you can read about it in the FXPHD production blog. I'll send you the link after the podcast, of course. But for those of you who are listening, you can get a link to the video and you'll actually look at this. And it's really great. And then again, the idea is that you have this video. It works on a mobile device as well. You can do anything from like a 2x speed up to a 10x speed up. And they actually have apps right now that are available for Microsoft Windows as well as Android available. So it is a Microsoft
So this project. Is the one that was by Microsoft Research?
Yep. And so, again, the real thing about this...
If you search under hyperlapse real time.
Yeah, we'll have the link by the time you listen to this up on the website. So we'll have a whole article explaining this for you guys. And, I mean, again, the idea is it's really smart, especially since you're going so fast, potentially, that you don't really need to be so precise and rigid about taking all those frames. And it really does really nice benefit, I guess. In getting a smoother hyperlapse in real time. And I guess they can get up to about 24 to 30 frames per second. That's what I mean in real time by playing back a video sequence on your phone. That's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And fun, you know?
I mean, the thing about these things is that it's sort of on the edge of what I'm going to call computational photography. It's, you know, combining compute power with image power. And there's just... I just feel like this is such a deep well to be drinking from because there's so many interesting things you can do. And you get results vastly better than you kind of deserve. That makes sense?
Yeah. Other interesting ones that they do that I'm going to write up is the one that's on time-lapse, utilizing photos taken in a given location over different years. So basically taking a look at a variety of images, say on Picasso or whatever, or... Google Images or something, finding corresponding images and doing a time lapse among them to get a really nice smooth time lapse. And Micah, what was the one they showed? A glacier? Was that?
It was a glacier receding. It was frightening. Loads of people stand and take photos of this particular glacier. And so they just got all these different photos from all these different cameras taken at all these different times of the year and from obviously slightly different angles, not like the sort of a fixed locked off point or anything. And then, just combine them into, hey, this is what this glacier's done over the last X number of years. That was remarkable. I mean, remarkable because not only is it cool, but it lets you see things you can't otherwise see. I mean, that's computational photography giving you an insight into our lives in a way you don't otherwise get. That was extraordinary.
So that session was good. That was all part of that time-lapse session. So that was one that I got to on, I think it like the last day or the next to last day. That was kind of fun. So those were interesting and a bit different. And also, you know, I think approachable. I didn't understand everything in the paper, like some of the algorithms that they did for determining how to pick the images that they chose to then time lapse. Some of that I didn't quite understand fully, but
so here's my theory on SIGGRAPH. To get something actually accepted, you have to basically develop some tech, write it up, and then you have to come up with a kick-ass looking equation. And I swear sometimes the kick-ass looking equations are just there as kind of pseudoscience to say, yeah, here's the equation. I don't think anyone goes, I ran that equation and I did a proof of it, and on the 13th page, I discovered a slight error. Like, they just look at it and go, okay, good. Oh, it's an integral. Okay, good, yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, my takeaway from it was they get a bunch of images, they pick ones that are similar by analyzing the images, and then they go through and effectively do color correction over the images to blend them. And then they align them, and then they do a color correction to them to do that. That's my takeaway in that process. Now, the mathematical functions, yes, I couldn't tell you what those were, Mike.
Well, John, I'm here to tell you that I just Googled this, and you can actually download a free version of that hyperlapse that you just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. It's available right for Android
Windows and Google. Yeah. Yeah.
So
awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So and they compared it, and it's interesting. They also compare it to other versions of the algorithms, like the hyperlapse on Instagram. How does it compare to that? Things like that. And again, they're just pointing out to, you know, where theirs is weaker or stronger, and I just think it's interesting stuff to be aware of. And again, over the years, if you go to these things, that's one of the cool things about SIGGRAPH. Over the years, if you go to these things, you kind of see how they develop, and then eventually at some point, you know, you end up seeing a product of some kind.
There's a whole part of SIGGRAPH that looks like what we hope will go into Photoshop, what we hope Adobe will pick up section.
Right.
It's like somebody comes up with a new tool for, like, you know, well, remember when the first time we did that thing where you can scale an image horizontally and it's content aware?
Yep.
And it's like, okay, Adobe, put that in now. How quickly can Adobe get this in Photoshop? I want this. It's like anything that's, some of those image processing stuff is just like, is magic.
It's magic. And yeah, and it's fun. So, and then I also, we didn't. I think it's a fair statement and a good thing that if a lot of the sessions, if we've covered them at FX Guide, we end up not going to those as much, mainly for feature film ones. But we did have some fun feature-related sessions, didn't we? I mean, especially the ILM 40th was really, as you would say, a cracker.
Hard because if we've got two sessions on and one of them's about a film that we've already covered and it's already been out there,
it is.
We kind of feel on a bound to go to the other obscure session in the hope we can learn something that'll go into like a background fundamentals or whatever. But there are occasions that I've just... So the one that was this time for me is I was really looking forward to the Avengers session, and the only time we could film with one of the VFX supervisors who is going to be in an upcoming episode of Background Fundamentals was when that was on. And so I couldn't say, well, no, extremely, extremely cool, wonderful Academy Award-winning visual effects supervisor, I've got something better to do than talk to you on camera. I happily did that interview. But there's a little part of me that goes, not any other time that you could be free? Possibly.
Yeah, that last Avengers session was really good, that late in the day, as you'd already left for the airport. And what was interesting about it, we'd already covered the work on Vision that Lola did actually on that, but it was really what was neat about it to actually see some of the images and see some of the trials and tests they did and actually coming up with the final look. That's something that you really can't, not allowed to show on FX Guide, not allowed to put up on the web, and that's one of those interesting things that you can only get in a situation like that, that I thought was pretty cool. Because it was
when they
so
say don't film
work
at SIGGRAPH, there's a reason they don't want you to film at SIGGRAPH, because if the studios stop us showing people showing that stuff, it'll be such a shame.
Yeah, and that was nice. I was just hanging out there to go to Max Sound Party, and I was like, it wasn't killing the time, but it was just a fortuitous moment to be able to attend that and see something that I wasn't able to glean. I certainly respect it from listening to the podcast and stuff. The work that they did on that was incredible, and I understood that, but then to see it firsthand was pretty cool.
Somebody's pointed out that the numbers at SIGGRAPH are down a lot than what they used to be, you know, back in the day. Because of the internet, obviously, and because, you know, like there wasn't an Autodesk booth down on the floor, was
there? No, there wasn't.
Somebody else wasn't down there as well. That was really big. And that's quite extraordinary, like if you think about it, you know, compared to what used to be the case. you would, you know, expect this huge booth from Autodesk down on the show floor. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, way back in the day, you'd have like Silicon Graphics and all the different companies that now are part of Autodesk, Mayers, the Software Marges, whatever. But yeah, it's so the papers, I think, just loom really large as why SIGGRAPH is still such a good conference.
Yeah, but because yeah, that's true.
Because you just, you know, you can't. I mean, I guess you can read the papers online and stuff, but there's something really great about going and seeing.
There is, because they release those videos, and I'll have links to some of the videos that they did in conjunction with these papers. But actually, going to a person, hearing someone talk through outside that video, I think is really useful. I certainly picked up on stuff that I didn't get in that video watching it online. But it's also kind of cool, don't you think? It is that they're actually doing teasers for the papers or releasing the paper kind of videos before to try and get you to go to see the sessions at SIGGRAPH. Try and get some buzz going in that. I think it's kind of interesting.
I mean, it used to be the case that nothing was released until after SIGGRAPH, and then you had to wait around for the, you know, hopefully the video or whatever, or the book to come.
Yeah. But they're
publicizing. Do you get the book sent you?
I haven't the last couple of years, no.
I don't know how to stop them sending them to me. I have a huge collection of them, and I'm quite proud of the collection. But I never actually look at them because I nearly always want to access them via a PDF.
You find them online, PDF. Yeah, just type in the name, and you can generally find them, can't you?
Which is faster than me actually getting up from my desk and walking 6 feet over to the bookcase.
They're searchable, too.
Picking out the year and then, trying to find it.
You can actually search the text in it as opposed to scanning it with your eyes. It's actually kind of nice. So anyway.
And there are videos, so, you know, you don't get the video in the book. So. Yeah, it's a shame, though, isn't it? They're kind of like a phone book. I mean, they really are big books. They must cost a fortune to ship. There must be some button I can click to ask them to not send it to me. Please donate the money to some orphanage in Africa, because I just, you know, I don't know how much it costs, but it's not the money, it's just the waste of shipping.
If you're not
much
using it.
Yeah,
certainly the case. So anyway, that was a lot of fun last week, and again, you got some great interviews for Background Fundamentals series as well.
Also, you're doing really good stuff for our VR course and
a bunch of, which is crazy. We have some good stuff in that. Been working with the folks at Magnopus on that, and have some crazy Nuke setups to share.
Excellent.
With stitching, crazy. Yes, should be. Yeah, and I'm still working on a flame setup too. Having some fun with that. I know you do. I know. Working on it. I'm going to make it happen.
Excellent. Glad to hear.
Excellent. All right, well, my friend, I better go.
Good talking to you.
Hit the ground. Good as always talking to you as well. And hey, also a big shout out to everyone. Thanks for helping us promote some stuff that we have going on at FXPHD. And I saw a lot of you tweeting the special thing we had going on for new members. So I appreciate you guys taking the time. I know many of you, I know that those of you who were tweeting it actually listen to this. So thanks for taking time to do that.
Yeah, much appreciated. And of course, for saying hi to us at SIGGRAPH.
Oh, yeah. It's so great to see people in the flesh, so to speak. You're never interrupting us, except when you're interrupting us. But
I don't think they actually did interrupt us. I can't think of an occasion when anyone did.
No, not this time.
We do tend to find a fairly obscure corner of the conventions that they record in, though.
Our peeps are very conscious of the fact that when there's a camera and they see us talking to the camera, that means that we are actually doing what's called recording. And unlike many people who just blindly walk through and not a care in the world. But
yes.
Not our members. Anyway, well, thanks everyone for listening. Enjoy having you all as part of the term, and thanks for great seeing everyone at SIGGRAPH, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.